This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing. My name is Patsy Gill. I have in the studio with me Professor Abney Eisenberg, who writes a monthly article for Senior Voice of America. Later in the program, we will be talking to him about his insights into the joy of writing. But my first guest is Sally Lloyd-Jones, a best-selling author of children's book with Christian themes. Sally.
Hi.
Oh, thank you so much for joining me today for Joy on Paper.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
I'm very, excited because your books are so wonderful, and I know they've been so well received. I want to talk about some of your recent releases, but before I do that, I have to talk about the Jesus Storybook Bible. It must be so exciting for you to know that you have sold over 1 million books in 19 languages.
Yes, it's unbelievable. I'm just so grateful to see the way God's using the book in all kinds of people's lives. And it's very humbling and wonderful.
And well, you're reaching such a wide range of readers. I know that originally, it was promoted as a book for 4 to 8 year olds, but it's an amazing the reaction that I've heard from people who say that they're preteens or teens are reading the book.
Yeah, we had to kind of very quickly take that age cap off, and ever since then I tend to not want an age cap. I prefer to say, because who am I to say who's going to read it? So I prefer to say, four and up or something like that, because then teenagers won't feel embarrassed if they're reading a book that says it's for up to 8 year olds.
Because it's a book I think that is as valuable for children as it is for adults. It's a wonderful book and an easy book to sort of become revitalized in the whole spirit of what you've tried to attain here with. You took on a very daunting task most people would, when they're going to go write sort of a book about another book, they're not going to take on the whole Bible as you did. It's amazing. How long did it take you?
Well, part of it is you get into these things not really knowing, what you're getting into. And it took me all in about a year to write, including the research and stuff like that. And then the process of getting the book out, when you work on a picture book, which is what it is really, it's a book that's a story told in two languages, word and image. The image is very important, so you can write the text, but you have to be sure that the image, that the illustrator does their job. And so finding the right illustrator, that was another hurdle we had to get over. So the whole process of the book probably took like 3 years.
Well, and you did find the right illustrator.
We did.
He's amazing.
I know.
Captured your words in pictures.
Yes, Jago. He's amazing. And they say in a book like this that's illustrated, the illustrations are like the front door of the book. And unless the illustration is right, you as the writer, your text doesn't stand a chance. So I'm very aware of how important Jago is in the whole book. And we are both sort of stunned at how well it's done and very grateful. And I love working with him. He's wonderful. Well, and the other thing that you always want is for the voice of the text to match the voice of the art in such a way that people wouldn't really be able to tell like the person who wrote it looks like they could have drawn it. Or
exactly. It has to feel yeah. seamless. And that's exactly yeah. what it does. One knows that you didn't draw yeah, the picture, exactly. but one feels that he captured your vision. Yeah. And that's yeah. that's the beauty of it. That's always yeah, the definitely. True success of a picture book is when there is that seamlessness to it.
Yes, and I love the other equation someone told me, a publisher said, 1 + 1 = more than 2. When you get it right, something else happens. And, not only just the art, but then the design, the way it's produced, the way Zondervan produced it with such lovely paper. And, the whole thing becomes, and then the team at Zondervan getting it out there. It's all, you're very aware with a picture book like that, but it's a team.
Well, you do have you have a wonderful publisher.
I do, and I'm very grateful. We are a great team.
Well, they do a fantastic business. Of course, they specialize in Christian books, and I know that their sales are tremendous, and it's a growing market. There are so many Christian writers and so many Christian readers who want to find books that stimulate their own ideas, and I think it's an amazing market, and you really mm-hmm. tapped into it. But it was I'm sure it wasn't an easy process, because there's a lot of you must have had to struggle to you're not a theologist, so you've had to
right.
really get into yeah. the stories, and you've managed to do something really beautiful, and you haven't simplified the stories. You haven't told, they're not like little short parables or something. You've made each story alive, and I think it's because of that thread that you've put through your books. Tell us a little bit about the Every Story Whispers His Name idea, and how it came to you, yeah. and how you carried that through, starting with the Old Testament.
People say, in answer to your question, how long did the book take to write? In some ways, it took a year plus however old I was at that time. I think I was I can't remember. But all of your life goes into writing a book. And so as a child, I was a believer from a young age. And I understood my relationship with Jesus like he was my best friend. He would never leave me. And yet, at the same time, I was going to a Sunday school when I was 6 where I hated it. I'm sure the teachers meant well, but what I got in my 6-year-old brain was that unless I'm being good, God won't love me. And unless I'm being brave, like Daniel, and not minding being thrown to lions, God won't be pleased with me. So I had this very odd idea that the Bible was about me and what I'm supposed to be doing to make God love me. And so when I was writing this book, my main passion was for children to come away knowing that that is absolutely not what the Bible's about. Yes, it has some rules in it, and yes, there are some heroes in it, but actually, to be honest, most of them are not heroes. They're scared, they run away, they make terrible mistakes, sometimes on purpose. And I wanted children to know the Bible is most of all a story, the story of how God loves his children and comes to rescue them. And at the center of that story, there's a baby, and every single story in the Bible whispers his name from the beginning to the end. And that baby is the one who's going to make all the difference. And so what I wanted to do was tell the incredible adventure story that the Bible is, the incredible love story about a prince who comes to win back his lost treasure. It's the most incredible story, and I think we, even as adults, we forget that it's not a lot of individual, unrelated sort of Aesop fable-type stories telling us all these moral lessons. The Bible is, first of all, a story. It's a story of how God made the world to be our perfect home. We lost it all when we ran from him. How he wouldn't leave the story there. He loved us too much. How he came to rescue us and restore us back to life with him. So every story whispers his name. I knew I wanted to point, in the Old Testament, all those stories are there to point to the rescuer that God is sending, either to show us we're not good enough, we would never be brave enough, but there is one who's going to be our hero, and he's coming. And so that was a very long answer, but that was the passion behind writing the book. I wanted children, first of all, to know God loves them and he comes to rescue them.
Well, I know that you were born in Africa, in Uganda.
Yeah.
And so it must have been very comforting for you. I know you were sent to boarding school. At what age were you sent? Did you leave Africa?
8.
at eight. So it must have been very comforting to have God, have Jesus at your side when you were sent to boarding school. Tell me, when did you speak Swahili as a child?
I did when I was very little. Apparently, I had a full-on conversation with a Maasai warrior. That's what I'm told, but I don't remember it now. But I think, you know, who knows? It's so musical and beautiful, that language. And I grew up, that was the soundtrack of my childhood. So in many ways, I wonder if that's part of what made me a writer. You know, you don't know.
Well,
I'm very grateful.
There is a sort of a pattern in your writing that perhaps you picked up some of that sort of rhythm of Swahili. Is one of the languages that your book has been translated into was Swahili?
I think it is. I think the Jesus Storybook Bible has just been, which is really wonderful. And the other language it's gone into, I'm half Welsh, my dad's Welsh, is Welsh. I don't really speak a word of Welsh, but here I have. I've written a book I can't read. But I gave the Welsh edition to my dad, and that was really wonderful. And we both were just sad that my grandparents weren't still alive to see it, because they've prayed so faithfully. And, you know, that's something we all are aware of, isn't it, that we stand on the shoulders of the people who went before us, who prayed for us. People in our families we may never have even met or known, but their prayers, all that faithful time that my grandparents were praying for me, they know in heaven they're going to know, but you feel very indebted. And the fact that my book went into Welsh seemed like a wonderful full circle.
Well, if it's in Swahili, you should definitely, have you thought about taking a book tour to Uganda?
I would love that. And I actually, Anne Boskamp, who I'm sure you know, has loves the Jesus Storybook Bible and works with Compassion. And she goes all over the world bringing the book with her. And so she sends me back photographs and blog entries. And I have yet to do that, but that's one of my, I would love to do that.
Well, I know that Uganda has, over 80% of the population is Christian. And I'm sure they would just love for you to do a tour there. It would be
I would love that.
Amazing,
that would be amazing.
And to see the children reading your book.
I know. That would be amazing.
If I were you, I would do a documentary of that. That would really make a terrific documentary. A girl born in Uganda who comes back with a book about Jesus. It's really quite an amazing and touching story.
It is, and I feel very grateful. You know, I think in the end we're going to know when we're in heaven, we'll know all kinds of things we have no idea of. But I'm very grateful when we get a little tiny, the curtains pull back slightly and we see something of what God's doing. And it's very powerful when you see it, isn't it? It makes you want to cry because he's always up to something big and much bigger than we think.
Christianity has so many problems today in this world, and to think that you're helping to spread the word and doing it in a way that is so joyful. I think the name of my program is Joy on Paper, and I just love to see words on paper. I love to write. I love to read.
Oh yeah,
and so it's anything to encourage people to read, and I think that's one of the things that you do with your books. And we'll talk about your other books soon. But I want to just talk about one more thing about the Jesus Storybook Bible is that you have an audio version, which is read by the Emmy Award-winning actor, David Suchet.
Yeah.
I was wondering, how did you get him? He's, you know, he's Hercule Poirot to all of us.
I know. My pastor says, and I love this, Tim Keller, he says, excellence is the most inclusive thing. And it means that, you know, if you do something, if you get the best, you're going to reach the most. That's what's so wonderful about that. It's not elitism. It's the opposite. It's reaching out to everyone. And so believing that, I thought, this book God gave me, I should go for the top. Why would I settle for anything? I mean, you can always say no, but at least you could ask. And so I started thinking of who would be the ideal person for this book. And I thought of several people. And then I remembered that I knew one of my dear friend's sister is the agent for David Suchet. And I thought, wow, I wonder if he would do it. And we contacted him. He fell in love with the book. He's a believer himself. He's a Jewish convert. So he was the perfect person. And I actually was in London when he recorded. I made sure I was there.
Yeah, I would be too.
He recorded the entire book in one day. Now, if anyone has ever tried to do an audio of anything, will know how incredible that is. I've tried, like I read maybe a verse, but I had to do like 10 takes for that one verse to get it right. And that took me almost all morning. That was just a verse. He did the whole book. And what I loved about him was he was humble. And he said to me, now I'm going to read this book. And what I think of it is that I'm reading really to my daughter. I'm her dad reading to her the story. And what was lovely about that was when I was first writing the book, someone shared with me about Martin Luther, what he'd been doing when he was translating the Bible into German. And Luther was trying to find out what kind of tone should I have in the language? What kind of words should I use? Should I go to, you know, the universities and get the academics, what they say? No, he said. I'm going to go in. We go into the home and we listen to a mother speaking to her children. And when I wrote the Jesus Storybook Bible, that image of a mother speaking to her children guided me, gave me the tone that I needed. But I never told David Suchet that. So when the first thing he says out of his mouth is, I'm reading this to my children. It was one of those God-ordained moments where you're like, okay, someone else is in charge of this, and David Suchet is his choice. And it just was a joy.
Well, it is magical. I would recommend really anyone who this is actually a perfect gift for a senior, because to listen to his reading it's so compelling, and it's so beautiful, and hearing your words and the way he reads, it's a wonderful book. And I audio version, you know, I'm not always in favor of audio versions because I love the written word, but in this case, to hear his voice and to hear your words coming out of his mouth, it's really magical.
It is. He's wonderful.
He is fantastic. Sally, I need to take a quick break, but please hold on. And when we get back, I want to talk about Bunny's First Spring and about your niece and how she inspired you to write another book. This is WTAN 1340, Tampa Bay's Tan Talk Radio, broadcasting from beautiful Clearwater, Florida. We will be right back after a few messages.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hi, I'm John Rakowski with Charles Ruttenberg Realty. Don't you love living here in the Tampa Bay area? Oh, I'm sorry, you don't live here yet? Well, if you already are or thinking about it, call me at my office at 727-538-9200 extension 2 for any real estate needs, including a free market analysis of your home. Your home is worth more than you can imagine. Call me today at 727-538-9200 extension 2. I'm John Rakowski.
Are you looking for the perfect gift? Going to a wedding? A special birthday? The Silver Queen is the place to go. Graduations are coming up. Don't settle for the ordinary. At the Silver Queen, you will find a unique gift. Things that you won't find at the mall. From beautiful photo frames to silver and china, you will find just what you're looking for. One that says, you care. Guys, looking for that perfect ring? You'll find it at the Silver Queen. And don't forget their bridal registry. Located at 1350 West Bay Drive in Largo, the Silver Queen is the place to go. Visit their website, silverqueen.com. They have some wonderful coupons. And when you go to the store, tell them that Patsy with a Z sent you.
The City of Dunedin introduces baseball done our way. Start with a morning on our pristine beaches. Next, off to downtown for some unique shopping. Then a bit of lunch at one of our many award-winning restaurants. And now, time for an afternoon game at Florida Auto Exchange Stadium. Finish the day off with a sunset cruise on the Gulf. A day in Dunedin. A day done our way. For more information, go to dunedingov.com.
Some people don't believe in mermaids. Hope that's not you, because they exist at Wikiwachi Springs State Park off US 19 and State Road 50, just north of Spring Hill. Since 1947, the magic of the mermaids have been entertaining visitors at the 538-acre Springs Park. Come and watch in the 400-seat submerged theater, The Little Mermaid Show at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. daily. Wikiwachi State Park offers mermaid shows, reptile shows, boat tours, and swimming in the pristine springs. Spring at Buccaneer Bay, Wickiwachee State Park is a perfect backdrop for wedding receptions, birthday parties, picnics, meetings, retreats, family reunions, or just to relax on the white sandy beach. Step back in time when things were much simpler and enjoyable. Spend the day at an original theme park. Call 352-592-5656 or log on to wickiwachee.com for upcoming events, hours, and ticket pricing. Wickiwachee Springs State Park, where mermaids do exist.
Anchorage, be patient. Halifax, hold tight. Prague, Spokane, and Markham, you're just gonna have to wait. We know you miss your boys, but they have no intention of returning before they bring home the cup. The Tampa Bay Lightning.
The 2015 Stanley Cup playoffs are on sale now. Visit TampaBayLightning.com.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I'm back with my guest, Sally Lloyd-Jones. Hi, Sally.
Hi, Dan.
Okay, listen, tell us a little bit about the story that was inspired by your niece.
There was one, I think the one you're talking about is Thoughts to Make Your Heart Sing.
Yes.
Is that one you mean?
Yes.
Yeah. So I had a little niece, I mean, I have her, but when she was about eight, she went from being very vivacious and joyful and out there. She was sort of like a little girl who would sing her way through life. And anyway, one day, she just sort of almost overnight went from being like that to very quiet and hidden away and didn't talk. And then we found out she was being bullied at school. And later I asked her, why did you get like that? And she went, I thought if I stopped being me, I'd stop getting in trouble. And it broke my heart. And at the time I said to her and her sister, what does she have to help her when she goes into school and has to face those bullies? And they showed me some material that they were reading, and it was probably a helpful thing in another situation, but it was very moralistic. And it was things like, just like the little boy shared his lunch, you too must share your lunch, the feeding of the 5,000, moral kind of thing. And I thought, as a grown-up, if we were going into the office and having to face bullies, you know, in a conference room, scary people, in what way would that be helpful to tell us we've got to share our lunch? That's not helpful. We need comfort. You know, we need strength. And I thought in all the things that we've given children, and we give them a lot, but sometimes we forget to give them hope. And I just thought, I wish my niece had something she could read to tell her what God says about her instead of what the bullies were saying. And so I wrote it. And I knew when I was writing it that it needed to be beautiful. It needed to have the image I had in my head was, this book has to be so beautiful that the child won't let go of it, that it has to be at their bedside table, and that they'll have to be persuaded to share it with the rest of the family. I wanted it to belong to the child, not be forced on the child. And what's so interesting is the feedback I get is often, first of all, from mothers who say, my child's been bullied and this book is helping her. And the other thing they tell me is that the child has it on their bedside table. So when I hear both of those things, I think it's God's. He gives you the vision of what he wants you to do, and he's so faithful. I mean, that was just given to me, that idea that it had to be beautiful. But that guided us. And again, Jago illustrated, and it's beautifully designed and gorgeous. And it's 101 thoughts, and they're all, the title is Thoughts to Make Your Heart Sing. And that was the inspiration, my niece.
Well, it's a great book, and one that I'm sure many parents should have this same problem, and they should really get this book. It's called Thoughts to Make Your Heart Sing.
And David Suchet has read that one too.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Oh, wow.
Right. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Well, you're on a roll with him. That's,
I know.
That's fantastic.
Yeah,
well, I know that you enjoy, you know, meeting children, talking at Sunday schools, and what is the thing that you learn? I know, you know, people sometimes go, you know, to speak to children to teach them things, but I think you learn as much from the children as you do teach them. So what's
yeah.
the thing that you learn the most from the children?
I think it's that wonder when you read them a story from the, like, say, for instance, I'm reading Thoughts to Make Your Heart Sing or Jesus Storybook Bible. It's the seriousness and the seriousness with which they take the story. And often, and this is an interesting thing where, you know, I'll go into a school or a church or something, and I'll ask them, what's your favorite story from the Jesus Storybook Bible? I'll read it to you. And several times, you know, it's all this fun visit, and several times, it happens almost without fail, one child will say, the crucifixion, when the sun stopped shining. And the strange thing is, as an adult, your first reaction is, oh, no, no, I think we better have something more fun. But you stop yourself because you realize, what are we doing? Children know that that's the crux of the whole story. That's the pinnacle. And they want to be taken seriously. And so what I learned from that is our job is to entertain them and engage them, but we're not there to divert them. We're there to equip them and prepare them, you know, and we, you know, sometimes you find yourself thinking, oh, I must protect them from the from death and these things that are so sad. Children, that's not what we should be doing. We need to be telling them the truth. And when you have a child asking you for that story, what they're saying is, I want the truth. Because there's a way to be age appropriate and still tell the truth. And so I caught myself a couple of times where I'm like, of course they want that story, because that's the ultimate, that's the best, that's the center of the whole story, how God loves us, you know, and it's shown on the cross. So I learned a lot from that. But there are so many things you learn, aren't there?
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things I'm sure my listeners want to learn from you is, what advice do you have for Christian writers, other than praying that their book is published by Zondervan? Because Zondervan, I mean, Zondervan is the premier publisher for, well, for Christian books. But it's difficult to say just Christian books, because they're not just for Christians. They're books that have this... sort of universal theme.
I think what I would say is, I mean, I tend not to call myself, I'm a Christian who writes. That's how I see it. And whatever story, my job is to tell the best story I can tell. And sometimes that story will be something very funny that goes to Random House. It might be a story that's retelling a Bible story. But it's all coming from the center of my life, which is where the, you know, redemption and joy and hope. So I would encourage people not to limit themselves, just to pray to God, you've given me this desire, you've given me this gift, show me, give me the stories I should be writing. Now, those stories may be for, like you said, they may be for people who wouldn't come anywhere near a church, and that may be what you're called to do. It may be a story that's for people within the church, but I tend to think, I think it was C.S. Lewis who said, there's no such thing as Christian cookery. It's either good cookery or it's bad. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, exactly.
I feel like the most helpful thing for me is to focus on the quality of what I'm doing. And then, as I'm writing it, you know, and you need to know who you're writing for. And I'm always very careful that I'm not writing for the publisher, and I'm not writing for the editor. I'm not writing for my friends. I'm writing for a child. So that's a good thing to check in on, and I have to check in on that all the time to make sure I'm not, if I start writing for the editor, then I'll start being too, oh, that's clever, I'll get in the way, I get self-conscious. Mm-hmm. If I'm writing for a child, then my ego's out of the way, and I'm really about giving them the best story they and making them turn the page. So, and it keeps you honest. So I think my advice would be, focus on the quality of what you're doing and don't get distracted, you know, about, a lot of people end up saying, well, do I need an agent, and which publisher should I go to? I think the first thing is, write the best book that you can write. Work on that, and then the other stuff will become clear, you know?
So how do you write every day? Are you one of those people who get up, like I get up every morning and try to write? But
That's wonderful.
Are you?
I would like to be. Some weeks I'm like that. Other times the business of writing gets in the way, but I'm trying to be more disciplined about putting the business side of it to the afternoon and working in the morning. And, you know, sometimes that means I have to get out of my apartment and I have to go to a coffee shop. So I am better when I do that, because then I feel like I've done the most important thing first, you know, and then you don't resent it. Well, you know, you're happy to do the other stuff.
Exactly. What computer program do you use to write?
I use Word. What do you use?
I use Scrivener.
Yes, I've heard Scrivener's very good. I haven't done that one.
Oh, well, it's from England, so you might want to try it.
And What kind of writing do you do?
Oh, all sorts of things. So I'm trying to keep busy. I love your accent, by the way, because I lived in England for quite a few years. I had a cottage in Sonning near Henley.
Oh, nice.
And so I always love to get someone with a British accent on. It's joy.
Well, we sound clever. We can say anything, and we sound like we know what we're talking about.
Well, that's true. Yes.
Not really fair.
Yes. It was nice when I first came back to America. People said I had a British accent, and it was very nice because I come from northern Michigan, and we have a sort of a... Well, it's let's just say they make fun of us, you know, like... So it was funny that I came back and I sounded rather British, but I lost it. I went to Texas first, and so then I picked up a Texas accent, and then now I'm in Florida. Oh. So, you know, it's sort of a all-around thing.
That's funny.
You know, one question about Africa, back to Africa for a moment. And I do hope that you take my advice and do a documentary of your return to Africa, because you have not. I didn't see any of your books having an African theme.
Not yet. Africa's so vivid in my mind. I think the reason I haven't gone back is because I would want to go back for the right reason. Do you know what I mean? And because it's so magical in my head, I'd want to go back for some mission or something like that.
I think to spread the Jesus storybook Bible is a great reason to go back. That's for sure. and I'm sure that you would be most appreciated there. Tell me, do you do a lot of writers' conferences? Are you busy this summer going to writers' conferences?
I actually, funnily enough, I end up speaking mostly in the context of churches. Like, I'm going to LA and I'm speaking at Girl Talk to young women, midweek, and I talk about the power of story and the dignity of children, and I weave in my own story. I don't really speak at writers' conferences so much. I tend to be at churches or women's groups or stuff like that. I don't know. But it's always evolving, and, you know, and I've also found I've made a connection with musicians and have a great connection with friends in Nashville, and I even have ended up sort of in concert, which I love to say that, in concert with certain musicians, and including in February, we had this wonderful thing where we did Story in the Round, where I read from Thoughts to Make Your Heart Sing and from another picture book, The House That's Your Home.
Wow.
And Ashley Cleveland and Amy Grant, we rotated. So Ashley would sing something, I would read something, Amy Grant would sing something, and we would never know who was going to sing what or read what. And it was this lovely evening of song and stories, and we loved it so much. And so things like that, I'm just blown away, because I think, what on earth am I doing up here with Amy Grant?
Well, that's fantastic.
And then I think God is just amazing how he puts things together. And I think what it is probably when you write for children, picture books especially, you have to distill down. And it's what you said, you're not being simplistic, but the art of being simple is distilling. And you're not losing the meaning, but you're getting to the essential. And that's really exactly what a songwriter does.
I love your dedication for the storybook Bible, where you say fairy tales can come true. And that is so true. It's amazing what the mysteries of life and all of amazing things that can happen to one.
I know.
So I love your website, by the way. It is a beautiful website.
Oh,
it's one
you.
Of the nicest websites, certainly one of the nicest writers' websites I've ever seen. Tell the listeners the name of your website.
It's my name, SallyLloydJones.com.
Oh, but...
And on there...
A hyphen.
Oh, is that what you mean?
Yes, Sally Lloyd with a hyphen... Jones, very British.
Yes.
Make sure you...
And Lloyd is L-L-O-Y-D. And what's so fun about the site is on there you'll see... Well, there's on the Etc. page at the top, you can see a great gallery of me on, you know, in concert with my various musician friends. There's amazing videos of David Suchet being videoed, asked about the book, Jago, me. And so there's lots of resources on there that are fun. And then really fun trailers, which I love. It's like being at the movies. Zondervan make these incredible trailers of the books that I just love. So there's lots of fun. And also, I write a blog. So that's always fun.
Okay. Well, I want all my listeners to go and look at your website. And Sally, I want to thank you so much for joining me today on Joy of Paper.
Well,
and, you know, we didn't get a chance to talk. I'm so sorry. You know, about it's just crazy. The time went so fast about Bunny's First Spring, which is a book of hope. It's available on Amazon, and it's a lovely picture book. Again, you know, in this case you have a different illustrator, but he has captured your words.
He's amazing. He's a glorious picture book illustrator, and he you'll see all that on my website.
Exactly. So everybody, please go to Sally's website, and I will put it up on my webpage and on my Facebook page. So Sally, thank you so much. It was a joy to talk to you.
It was such a joy to talk to you, and I really am so grateful for being included on your show.
Okay, thank you, and I'll have you back again. And
okay, good.
Think about going to Africa.
Good luck.
Okay.
Thank you, and you all the best to everyone with their writing, and just keep writing.
Okay, thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Is the Tantalk Radio Network.
It's time to visit the Silver Queen, the premier location in the Tampa Bay area for gifts for all occasions. At the Silver Queen, you'll find the perfect gift for the queen in your life. From elegant earrings and jewelry bags, beautiful photo frames that you won't find in the mall. So stop by the Silver Queen, located at 1350 West Bay Drive in Largo. Is there a wedding in your future? Then the Silver Queen is the place to go. They have an amazing selection of engagement and wedding rings, and their bridal registry will ensure that you receive gifts that you will treasure for a lifetime. How about a birthday? You must check out their musical Silver Plate Birthday Cupcake. It is the kind of gift that will be used year after year. It's just $40. It is the perfect gift for a baby's first birthday. Check out their website, silverqueen.com. They have some wonderful coupons. Remember, the Silver Queen, 1350 West Bay Drive in Largo. It is the store with the beautiful dome.
Charles Ruttenberg Realty proudly sponsors Joy on Paper with Patsy Gill. Charles Ruttenberg sets the standard of excellence with residential and commercial real estate transactions and can help you on your next transaction, whether that is for a second home, investment, or downsizing. Call us today at 727-538-9200 extension 2 and allow me to help you. I'm John Rakowski, the broker at Charles Ruttenberg Realty.
Are you looking for some great restaurants? For some great wines? Where are the great chefs? Listen to Dine Out Radio Herd every Wednesday on the Tantalk Radio Network. 12 to 1 p.m., we'll tell you where all the great events are. We'll have Food and Wine Magazine and Bon Appetit Magazine. We'll have their editors and writers on each month. And maybe we'll throw in a couple surprises. Check out the website, diningoutradio.com. My bridge is all.
Hi, this is Regis, host of the Regis Sneary Show, serving those who serve. Join me every Saturday from 9 to 10 a.m. on the Tantalk Radio Network. If you have friends or family who have served or are currently serving in the military, the show is for you. That's the Regis Sneary Show, serving those who serve, Saturdays at 9 a.m. on the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hello, I'm Arch Steele. For decades, I was a television and radio news anchor. Even so, most people remember me as a guy whose parachutes failed to open. I obviously survived, and I'm returning to my roots with the Arch Steele Hour on three stations and nationally on the internet at www.tantalk1340.com. My co-host is Florida board-certified elder law attorney Laurie O. Hall. It all starts Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern. We're looking forward to talking with you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z. Welcome back to Joy on Paper. I have in my studio Professor Avni Eisenberg, a prolific writer who writes a monthly article for Senior Voice of America. Avni, nice to see you today.
My pleasure.
And tell me, we are talking today. I was talking to a writer earlier, and now I want to know, what do you think motivates someone to write?
I am convinced that everyone has a story. I'm also convinced that there are two kinds of people in the world. People who have something to say, and others who have to say something. The latter describes me. When I was 16 and came home from school, my father asked, "Did you ask a good question today?" Questions seemed to dominate my life. In fact, in 1971, I wrote a book called Questions That Challenge the Curious Mind. 79 questions that I ask people, and then I write a brief paragraph on how they answered it. One of the questions that I found most revealing, when you ask someone what one word describes your life, it is amazing how much information they will disclose. I find that asking questions is the key to communication. In fact, my ego took over when I recently wrote another book called Interviewing Myself. I decided that to ask myself all the questions that I've asked people all these years should be very revealing. So I published it called Interviewing Myself, and in it there are 300 questions that I ask myself and proceed to answer. I think that everyone, or at least some people, have what they call a calling, a desire to have a voice. That's me. I have a need to be heard.
Well, I think it's a great idea. As everyone knows, every week I try to motivate people to write, whether it's a story about their family, a story for their children, or Professor Eisenberg's idea of answering 300 questions. As a matter of fact, you might get his book and write your own version of his 300 questions and answer them and see how close your answers are to his. Tell me, Professor, what tools must a writer have?
Well, writers have been referred to as wordsmiths. However, I'm convinced that words are simply ink marks on a page, that meaning is not in words, but in people. And people tend to think in images rather than words. When I say horse, H-O-R-S-E, you don't think in your mind, H-O-R-S-E, you think of the picture of a horse. To be successful, and what I'm about to say will probably clash with what most people think, most people think an open mind is something that one should aspire to. I recently discovered that there is some value to a closed mind. A writer must have a closed mind that filters out irrelevancies. It enables them to focus, to concentrate exclusively on what they're writing about. So that in all, words are my tools, and if I use them wisely, I will be a good communicator.
Tell me, it's funny, when you said the word horse, what I thought of right away was my sore throat. I had a sore throat for two weeks, and it was, you know, when you're asking questions, and so I know you talk about asking questions. That's what I do all the time. I spend my life asking questions. So for me, a horse, when I heard the word horse, I thought, oh, another sore throat. Tell me, now you've written quite a few books, but one of the things that happens, of course, to writers and is that they face rejection a lot. Or, well, generally speaking, they face rejection a lot. Even J.K. Rowling's, who wrote Harry Potter, I believe her book was rejected 23 times. And at one point, an agent wrote her back and said, I suggest you don't quit your day job. Of course, luckily, she didn't listen, and she went on to make history in writing a book that has captured so many readers, and it has really done a wonderful job bringing so many young people to reading. But how should a writer handle rejection?
I guess the first thing that one has to take into consideration is that rejection does something to your ego. The ego, as we know in psychotherapy, is the word describes the self, the inner you, the inner voice. And when you have something rejected that you've written, it does damage to the sensitive ego. I'm reminded of George Orwell's book, The Animal Farm, with which some of you may be familiar. And even though Orwell was an established author, his book on The Animal Farm was rejected because, for one simple reason, he'd bad-mouthed Joseph Stalin, the leader in Russia. So that rejections very often don't necessarily make sense. They're not always logical. They can be idiosyncratic or some bias that the editor has. So that rejection should be an inspiration rather than a disclaimer. A book is important to the reader. And I think that rejection, again, is something that has to be put into perspective.
Well, I think that one suggestion, and this is to every writer, as a matter of fact, it's rather fun. This is a rather fun thing to do. One should never send out your book to, like, 50 agents. As a matter of fact, you can't send a book anymore or to publishers. Publishers, ever since 9/11, have not accepted books or any written material from writers. This is as a result of the anthrax scare. And so they all go through agents. Really, since 9/11, you almost cannot send anything to a publisher. And they figure, well, you know, if the agent gets something, let them get it. So it's funny that when you get a rejection letter, it is an idea. And some people might not appreciate this, but really save them and do up your powder room or your bathroom and wallpaper it. And eventually you'll get something published, and then you can sit around and look at that and laugh at all the people who rejected you. The author I had on a few weeks ago, you know, Eloisa James, she had been rejected I don't know how many times, and she went on to sell 6 million books. So you learn from rejection, and you have to take it with a grain of salt. Professor, Arthur Schopenhauer always said, use ordinary language to say extraordinary things. Tell me, why is it important for writers to keep it simple?
I think that when you write for your audience, and I think your previous listener or author stressed the fact that you have to consider your audience. And from my experience, when I pick up a book and I notice that the author is speaking and using sophisticated language pedantically, using foreign expressions with which the reader may not be familiar, and also the repetition of certain terms that are irrelevant. So the acronym Keep It Simple, Stupid should be in the forefront of every writer's mind. The doing, however, of keeping it simple is quite another story.
That's true. Tell me, one of the things that, writers want to be remembered. Now, I know that you wrote a book for your wife called My Mariana. Just tell me briefly about why you wrote that book.
I wanted very much to immortalize Mariana. She was my rebirth. She was my renaissance. And I have difficulty thinking of a life before Mariana. So I decided to write this book, My Mariana. And after I'm gone, long since buried, people will pick up the book, see the title, and ask, who is this My Mariana? And she will be able to survive me and live on for years to come.
Well, thank you, Professor Eisenberg. His book, My Mariana, is available on Amazon, and Abney is spelled A-B-N-E. And it's Eisenberg, Abney Eisenberg. But look for My Mariana, and you'll see some of his other books that he's written. And there's one book he's written about procrastination that sounds like I should read it. I haven't read it yet, but it sounds like the type of book I should read. So thank you so much today for being here today.
My pleasure.
And we'll have you back with your wife to read some poetry one day. Join me next week. When my guest will be Ricky Kleiman, the author of Fairy Tales Can Come True. And she will tell us how a driven woman can change her destiny. Meanwhile, go to my webpage, radio-joyonpaper.com, and let me know what author you would like me to invite on the program. Go to the contact page and send me an email. And remember, all you veterans, I will help you publish your book for free on Amazon and Kindle. Just go to my contact page and send me a message and we can get together and I will help you get your book published. This is Patsy with a Z, wishing you a great week. Remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken. I strongly suggest to everybody that you go to Sally Lloyd-Jones' website and listen to the audio that she has there of David Suchet reading her storybook Bible. It is truly an amazing reading, and you will really love it. So one of the things I read the other day, that Americans spend many hours on the computer searching around for heaven knows what. But while you're there, instead of just searching, why don't you start writing? And join me next Tuesday at 11 a.m. for Joy on Paper. Remember, don't let anyone steal your joy. Treasure it and share it. And have a great week. Bye.